What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Richard Michelson, author of the new book, Fascinating, The Life of Leonard Nimoy. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Rosh Hashanah is almost here, arriving tonight to herald the new year of 5777. It's a time of tshuva, of personal reflection, repentance, and return, when we turn our hearts to the task of improving our lives, morally and spiritually. This is a great time of year for Jews, the Yamim Noraim, highest of the holy days. If you haven't yet made arrangements for where you are going to go for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you should do so yesterday. Synagogues are filled on the high holy days. Some of those folks only come on the high holy days, but they wouldn't miss Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for any reason. It's the most important time of year for Jews and the most moving. To help you prepare properly, we're continuing our preview of the music of these High Holy Days with the Unetane Tokef. We observe the mighty holiness of this day, which is one of awe and trembling. This is from the Danzig Tradition CD, the choir of the Great Synagogue Jerusalem, with the great cantor Naftali Hershtick, Unetane Tokef, from the Rosh Hashanah morning service. Unetane Tokef for Rosh Hashanah and the Days of Awe, coming tonight to a temple near you. Rosh Hashanah is also, according to tradition, Hayom Harat Olam, the birthday of the world. It's a charming concept, echoed in the liturgy of the Shofar service on the Jewish New Year tomorrow, and it reminds us that New Years are a time of beginning. Each of us has the opportunity to make this shiny New Year into something special, something different from what has preceded it. It's a great time to fix what's wrong in your relationships, to meet new people, to decide to make a fresh start in the 5777 year that begins tonight.
Halomot shel etmol hem shalavot miradot lo yachol kol hachoshech lechabot.
Of course, all beginnings start with an ending. This year, in fact, just a couple of days ago, Shimon Peres, the former prime minister and president of Israel, died at the age of 93. This truly marked the end of an era, for Peres was the very last of the generation of Israeli leaders who came of age during the War of Independence, helped create all the institutions of the State of Israel, and led the country through a variety of challenges to its present success. Shimon Peres is the last of that generation who helped lead the country to independence and developed all the things that really go into making up Israel. Born in Poland, he had a strong Jewish background. His family came to pre-state Israel, the Yeshuv, in 1934. Perez quickly adapted to Israel and the Hebrew, his fourth or fifth spoken language, joined the Haganah, and became a star protege of David Ben-Gurion, Israel's founding father. He was the father of the Israeli Air Force, of Israel Rafael Military Industries. He was the key figure in the development of Israel's nuclear capacity. Shimon Peres was the Minister of Defense, and he was the one who ordered the Entebbe rescue in the 70s. Peres served as Prime Minister on four different occasions, twice unofficially. He won the Nobel Peace Prize along with his friend and great rival Yitzhak Rabin in 1994 for brokering the Oslo Accords, and who is an extremely effective president, largely a ceremonial office that he elevated to truly international status. He did that from 2007 to 2014, at an age when most would have long retired from public life. While Peres's left-of-center parties were often defeated narrowly in national elections that were expected to return him to the premiership, Shimon Peres is an extremely important figure of both Israeli and international importance. There is no question that he is much more beloved outside of Israel than within it, although his tenure as president saw him becoming a favorite again among all Israelis. Shimon Peres was a pragmatic visionary and a lifelong optimist. He built relationships with leaders all around the world. President Obama ordered America to fly our flag at half-staff, a most unusual honor for a foreign leader. This was last ordered by Obama for the death of Nelson Mandela in 2013, but before that, it was last flown at half-staff for Pope John Paul II back in 2005 at the order of then-President George W. Bush. Shimon Peres was a statesman, a visionary, a literate and brilliant leader, and a poet and songwriter. He once said, "You are as great as the cause you serve, and as young as your dreams." May his memory bring blessing. We have lost some great Jews in the last months of this 57-76 year, Elie Wiesel, Gene Wilder, and now Shimon Peres. He will be much missed. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Richard Michelson, was a close friend of the actor Leonard Nimoy's. His new children's book explores the life of the man who created Spock and shows him to be a fascinating and multidimensional Jewish man, actor, director, and artist. Find out much more when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
It's everything you wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's Taste of Judaism program is now in its 17th year and explores Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community. This free introductory class taught by our rabbis is immensely popular throughout southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, Taste of Judaism brings to life Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. It'll help you rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all and include Jewish snacks. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year at Splendido as well. The whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class, starting soon. It's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email Mila, M-I-L-A, at tetucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Richard Michelson is the author of the new book, Fascinating, The Life of Leonard Nimoy. It's a children's book, but at a very high level, describing the hero of Star Trek and a fascinating Jew and a fascinating individual who sadly passed away not too long ago. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish, Richard.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back here.
Tell me where the idea of doing fascinating the life of Leonard Nimoy came from.
It really came out of a personal relationship. Leonard and I were very close friends. We spoke literally daily for the last dozen years of his life. Mostly by email, usually once a week by phone. We also traveled together regularly. And during our many years of traveling together, over lunch, over dinner, we told each other stories of our backgrounds. We talked about art. We talked about literature, our relation to Judaism. And what was strange for me was that even though, as you know, I write many picture book biographies of both well-known and lesser-known individuals, and even though I spent a good deal of my time setting up interviews for Leonard, everybody found his life fascinating. For some reason, it never occurred to me until really towards the end of his life to sit down and put some of these stories on paper.
You know, Leonard Nimoy was, like William Shatner, Jewish. Nimoy had a serious Jewish background. And, of course, the famous Vulcan gesture is the Birkat Kohanim, which comes out in the book.
Well, that's really where my book, the heart of the book, and where it begins. It was very important to Leonard's life. The book begins when he's an eight-year-old boy in Temple with his father. And some of the elders go up to the Bima to recite the prayer. Leonard was told by his father, don't look, put your eyes down. And, of course, he was an eight-year-old boy, so he peeked.
He peeked.
And and what he saw were these men pulling the prayer shawls over their heads and raising their hands in a prayer gesture, which he was to make world famous as the Vulcan hand salute. And the book takes him as a young boy to the second season of Star Trek when we visit the planet Vulcan for the very first time. And the script actually had Leonard meeting the Vulcan queen and shaking her hand. Leonard thought that he told the director, you know, there should be a better way for Vulcans to greet each other. Military men salute, Asians bow. Vulcans should do something a little different. But he hadn't quite thought it through. So when the director said, okay, well, what do you suggest? He was caught off guard. And and that's really the moment that he reached back into his own life and remembered this moment as a young child. And with a gesture that, as we talk about in the book, he noticed they were raising their hands in what looked like the letter Shin, which is the first letter of Shalom, peace, or Shaddai, one of the names for God. And Leonard raised his hand in that gesture. And he likes to tell off-camera what he didn't reckon on is that this is a gesture he had been doing since he was 8 years old with both hands on and off. He just loved it. But the rest of the crew and cast hadn't been practicing since they were young children. So it wasn't quite so easy for the other Vulcans to return that salute. A few of them had to go backstage and get their fingers taped. But it was an immediate hit. Leonard said after that show aired, he walked on down the street, and right away people started raising their hands and saying, live long and prosper. And he always got a wonderful enjoyment out of the fact that around the world people were doing this gesture and, in fact, blessing him and blessing each other, whether they knew it or not.
It's a fantastic story. And by the way, live long and prosper is not terribly far from Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. We will talk much more with Richard Michelson when we come back. Book is called Fascinating, The Life of Leonard Nimoy, in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Rabbi.
Quitting smoking, big part of your lives.
Yeah, it's very important. When we started this company just over 6 years ago, it was because I had a really bad cigar habit, and it was time for me to quit. We have 7 children. Our youngest just turned 8, and I wish to be around to watch them all grow up and have successful careers and family of their own.
And Pamela, it's better personally, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. I'm a non-smoker, and being with a person who smokes cigars in particular, it's much nicer. His body doesn't reek of it, his hair does not reek of it, his clothes do not smell of it, and there's no tobacco between his teeth anymore.
And you don't have to send him for extra showers or out in the rain.
No extra showers.
How can people find out more about Freedom Smoke?
You can look us up on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-705-7013. That's 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Thank
Rabbi.
You.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of 4 activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award in 2016, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com, T-O-O, Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. The top 10 of America, Moment Magazine says about us. We now have about 5 weeks until we elect a new president of these United States, and we continue our 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu told his cabinet after the first U.S. presidential debate that, as far as Israel is concerned, it doesn't matter who's elected. They both spoke of their support for Israel and the importance of bilateral relations between our countries, Netanyahu said at the start of the cabinet meeting last week, held just hours after the debate in New York between Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton and Republican nominee Donald Trump. Netanyahu met separately the day before the debate with both candidates. It doesn't matter which of them is elected. American support for Israel will remain strong. This alliance will stay strong and will strengthen in the coming years, Netanyahu said. Trump cited his meeting with Netanyahu during the debate when he criticized the Iran nuclear deal, which exchanged sanctions relief for limits on Iran's uranium enrichment and other nuclear activities. Netanyahu was vehemently opposed to the deal, saying it harms Israel's security. I met with Bibi Netanyahu the other day, and believe me, he is not a happy camper, Trump said. But Netanyahu seemed pretty buoyant while lauding the new U.S. military aid agreement, and he is not taking sides in this U.S. election. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And L'Shana Tova, good new year.
And to you.
Last year on Rosh Hashanah, I spoke about the Syrian refugee crisis and the need for Jews to understand that we've always been immigrants. It's a year since that time. Doesn't look like it's getting any better.
As we speak, in fact, there's a very high-level conference in New York under the UN aegis about the growing problem of refugees in the world, because it's not only from Syria, it's from all over the place. And a lot of wealthy industrialized countries have shown less willingness than in the past to open their doors. Angela Merkel, oddly, of Germany, has been one of the few European leaders who has courageously said, yeah, let them come. And it's cost her...
Yeah, serious political cost.
Right. It's cost her a lot of political capital, and it has alienated her from some of her colleagues, fellow leaders in the European Union, and has set Germany on sort of a different course. But our own record on this is not so great. I mean, we are way, way bigger than certainly the old states in the European Union. With the expanded European Union, there's kind of a rough equivalence. But anyway, we're more or less the same size as the European Union. And we're taking a microscopic percentage of the number of refugees that the Union is. And there are still those who claim it's too much, they're dangerous, they're all criminals, blah, blah, blah. Stigmatizing an entire population because there are some extremists there, just as there are extremists everywhere. But recently there was a piece in the New York Times, which we had talked about off air, comparing the current refugee crisis in Europe to the refugee crisis Europe faced and the West in general, including the U.S., at the end of the 30s and the early 40s, when Jews were trying desperately to escape their European homelands as one after another they fell under Nazi control. And for most Jews in countries controlled by the Nazis, a Nazi takeover was a death sentence. And there was, you know, the whole Shoah and 6 million people. And the headline in the New York Times was, would you hide a Jewish refugee from the Nazis? And then it went on to ask, and if so, why would you not hide a Syrian refugee from the Nazis? And it raised from their equivalent from to Hamas. Modern day Nazis.
Or frankly, from Assad.
Right, exactly.
Take your pick.
From the Syrian government. So I think the whole question of how we treat refugees, the homeless, the undocumented, the underdog, is one that we have to perpetually reexamine. The Seder certainly calls on us to do so. But also at this time of year, at Rosh Hashanah, when we do sort of a cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting for our souls, we have to ask ourselves about our personal policy towards the have-not, and our national policy. And I see that we're running out of time, but maybe we can pursue more of this next week.
Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week again. A good and a sweet new year.
Thank you.
We have a special visitor who will be an ongoing visitor, one of our Shin Shinim here, talking about Israel on behalf of Oshrat Barel, the head of the Weintraub Israel Center. It's Bar Al-Kacher, who is here with us for the year teaching in our schools and is having a... Well, first of all, let's explain the Shin Shinim program.
Okay, so hey, I'm Bar, just like Rabbi said, and our Shin Shinim program is basically our year of service in the Jewish community for me and Leah, my partner, and we are just going to all the different congregations and all the different places, the Jewish lives there, and we're just explaining our Israeli life and making them understand how to live in Israel and, you know, basically showing them activities and showing them fun stuff about Israel that they know more about that probably Americans don't really know as much as we want.
And teaching, and one of the goals is to embed you in a Jewish community so people get a chance to meet you and get to know both of you guys. You're wonderful young people, great representatives of the state of Israel. Yeah, I know. Tell us a little bit about the experience of being here in Tucson, Arizona, while your friends who you grew up with graduated from high school and they're doing very different things right now.
Yeah, well, basically what I do is a Shnat Shirut is like a year of service inside the United States and outside of Israel, and a lot of my friends are doing it inside of Israel, like Shnat Shirut inside of the state of Israel and helping with different kibbutzim and working there and going to special needs people and helping them during the week. And that's really a different experience because I hear from them and they're like, okay, I go home every 2 weeks and I see my parents.
See mom and dad.
Yeah. And then I'm like, yeah, I talked to them last week on Skype. So, you know, that's a different thing. And also I have like my friends that are from a lower grade that are going to graduate this year. I'm like, a few weeks ago, they graduated and they graduated 11th grade, and then they're already becoming 12th grader, and they're, you know, in my footsteps of last year. And I'm like, no way, they're not. They're still the little, you know, 11th graders who I used
kids.
To, you know, talk to, and I like my real friends. And it's so weird because, you know, I'm just here and working and teaching 12th graders and 11th graders. So that's the cycle has changed upon me. So
pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
Do some, first of all, what percentage of, say, your class did Shnat Shirut, did this extra year of service?
Actually, my class, well, where I live in Emek Yisrael, in Shimshit, it's really Like the Shnat Shirut is really big there. It's really a big deal, and people like really love doing it. So in my class, we had 31 students, and 20 of them did Shnat Shirut or Mechina.
So in the Jezreel Valley, everybody does
it's,
it. Like
it's really big there because it's, I don't know why, maybe there's a, like a history of it, but I think the Shnat Shirut there is really important. And 20 out of 31 is an amazing stat. And I think I can also understand from my friends what an amazing experience they're having. So, you know, at the end of the year, we'll have like a reunion and talk about all different Shnat Shirut.
And you'll learn actually from each other about
so much more. Yeah,
absolutely.
With Leah as well. Yeah.
Making it very rich. Another time we'll get you to talk about the fact this doesn't mean that you don't go and do 3 years of military service when you get back and go to college and all the other things, but it's just kind of an additional service to the state.
Yeah.
L'shana tova tikateu v'techateimu.
Shana tova, Rabbi.
Bar, we will talk next year.
Oh yeah, great. Shana tova.
Shana tova.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John, and L'Shana Tova.
L'Shana Tova, Shalom, Shalom.
Tikatevu v'techatemu. May you be written
Thank you.
And sealed in the Book of Life. Rosh Hashanah begins almost immediately. You know, we have this image of the Book of Life, the Sefer Chaim, and books in Judaism are usually at the heart of who we are. We're the people of the book. We study books.
Great for schools.
Wonderful for schools, even if they'll eventually all be electronic. but that image is sometimes good and sometimes problematic. Tell me about how would you teach Rosh Hashanah? Do you use the notion of the Book of Life with kids?
We certainly touch on the Book of Life as one of the concepts of Judaism, and the idea that, you know, somebody is paying attention and kind of keeping note and what's going to happen during the course of the year.
It's not like he's keeping a list, knows who's been naughty and nice.
Right. It's a little more abstract and serious than that. And we rally around the whole concept of books and book learning. We're the people of the book, you know, and when we rebranded the school, our new icon, our new image, the center is a book. And so book study is happening and so on and so forth. So in terms of where we are spiritually and in our growth as people and how we're maturing as individuals, how our values are growing and the adults that children are growing into and becoming, all that is very topical. And dealing with the Book of Life or the concepts related to that notion of the Book of Life really help to provide an opportunity for that dialogue and that inner search and discussion and doing things that help us on this journey.
You know, it seems to me that we're going to spend a lot of time in the synagogue. I will for sure. I know over the next couple of weeks, next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, people spend a lot of time looking inward. But really, that's something that education should encourage us to do all the time.
Absolutely. Introspection, right? Who are we? Why do I do the things I do? What makes me feel good? What makes me feel lousy? How do I make a contribution? And how do I understand myself? Really critical things. And there's a huge role for schools to play, no matter what kind of school you're talking about, a Jewish day school, the synagogue educational programs, whatever you're participating in, that introspection and that searching and that thinking, really, really important to be talking about and diving into. And again, you know, we get that cycle of the year. So here's our moment. This is what we do now. So there's a great framework and foundation to take a deep dive into those things right now.
Well, may it be a good dive. And I don't know if that's ever been said in a Jewish setting before, but may you be written and sealed in whichever Book of Life you prefer.
Thank you, Rabbi. You as well.
Thanks, John. Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. A Jewish man buys a talking parrot and discovers the previous owner was a cantor, but this is no ordinary bird. The parrot is spectacular. Not only can he speak normal English, but he also knows the whole High Holy Day Hebrew liturgy by heart, and he can sing all the prayers beautifully, and does so all the time. The man's excited, and he begins to tell the guys at the synagogue about this amazing bird, who he swears will be able to pray the whole service on Rosh Hashanah. Well, guys being guys, they all scoff. One thing leads to another. Pretty soon, there's serious money being laid down over whether the parrot can really lead prayer. The parrot's owner figures he has a sure thing. He knows how great his bird is, and he takes every bet. Pretty quickly, he's covering thousands of dollars in wagers. Rosh Hashanah morning rolls around. The guy brings his parrot into temple, sets him up on the pulpit, opens his little parrot prayer book, puts his little parrot tallis on him, and sits back. The congregation waits and waits and waits. Nothing. The parrot doesn't make a sound. His owner cajoles him, tries to bribe him with tiny pieces of apples and honey, begs him, but nothing. There's lots of talking now. Everybody's joking. Finally, in humiliation, the man admits defeat, puts the parrot back in the cage, and walks out of the synagogue. As soon as he gets outside, the guy starts threatening the parrot. "I've never been so humiliated in my life. You cost me thousands, you miserable clot of feathers. I'm going to have you stuffed, fricasseed. You'll wish you never double-crossed me." The parrot comes to life with a squawk. "Shah already," says the parrot. "Think of the odds we'll get on Yom Kippur." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and get good odds on Yom Kippur. And now a word of Torah. Tomorrow morning on Rosh Hashanah and Tuesday morning in Conservative and Orthodox congregations, we'll read a special Rosh Hashanah portion, The Great and Terrible Story of the Binding of Isaac, the Akedah. God tests Abraham by having him almost, but not quite, sacrifice Isaac on a rock. As we remember the trauma of Isaac and the faith and struggle of Abraham, we know that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we stand before God, open to the judgment that comes on Yom HaDin, this day of decision. May we come to know the openness this judgment requires and atone honestly for our sins and errors in the past year. Poet Chaim Guri has an interpretation of this tale from a very different direction. The translation is by Tet Karmi, Alav HaShalom, my teacher, may he rest in peace. It's called Yerusha, Heritage. The ram came last of all, and Abraham did not know that it came to answer the boy's question, first of his strength when his day was waning. The old man raised his head, seeing that it was no dream and that the angel stood there, the knife slipped from his hand. The boy, released from his bonds, saw his father's back. Isaac, the story goes, was not sacrificed. He lived for many years, saw what was good in life until his eyesight dimmed. But he bequeathed that hour to his offspring. They are born with a knife in their hearts. A powerful and troubling poem of testing and mortality in this holiest of seasons. We stand before God now, as Abraham and Isaac both did, and face a unique challenge. Knowing our mortal status, can we rise to affirm our essential holiness? We are doubly blessed this week with an additional Torah reading for Shabbat Shuvah, the Sabbath of Repentance, this coming Saturday. That is the portion of Vayelech near the end of the Torah in the very last stages of the book of Deuteronomy. It tells of the final days of Moses, his last instructions to the people of Israel he has led for so many challenging years. In Rosh Hashanah's Torah reading, the Akedat Yitzchak, Abraham is told to sacrifice his son, but the killing is averted. But in our Shabbat Shuva Torah portion of Ayelach, the killing, that is, the death of Moses, will come. The connection in this season of judging is to Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, a day in which we dress in the white clothing of the shroud and face our own personal judgments. On Rosh Hashanah, the Yom HaDin, like Abraham and unlike Moses, we have the chance to avert an evil decree, the opportunity to turn a kind of spiritual death sentence into a renewed message of hope, renewal, and spiritual cleansing. May this week's Torah readings help us find our own message of life and truth by compelling us to look at the possibility of our own passing. When we face death, we learn to value life and to live it as though it matters. Our guest on Two Jewish This Morning, Richard Michelson, has written a charming book about his close friend, actor, director, photographer Leonard Nimoy, creator of the character of Spock on Star Trek. Find out what made him such a remarkable man when we return right here on Two Jewish in just a moment. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A strange story from an unlikely locale. The ancient, tiny Jewish community of Kaifeng, China, has seen a revival of sorts in recent years. But after publication, there are widespread reports that China's communist government has suddenly cracked down on the tiny Kaifeng Jewish community. After locking down Buddhist monasteries in Tibet, tearing down church crosses in eastern China, President Xi Jinping's campaign against unapproved religion and foreign influence has turned to the small group of Jews whose ancestors settled in the faded imperial city near the banks of the Yellow River more than 1,000 years ago. A few hundred residents have staged a lively, sometimes contentious rebirth of Kaifeng's Jewish heritage in recent decades. They have classes, services, and are planning to rebuild the lost synagogue as a museum. Some residents of Kaifeng, China, even migrated to Israel. For years, the city government tolerated their activities. It's officially communist. They saw the Jewish link as a magnet for tourism and perhaps investment. But since last year, Chinese authorities have come down hard on the Kaifeng revival. Even the smallest spiritual groups can fall under the pall of the Communist Party's suspicion in China. The government has shut down organizations that help foster Jewish rediscovery, prohibited residents from gathering to worship for Pesach and other holidays, and removed signs and relics of the city's Jewish past from public places. The whole policy is very tight now, said Guo Yan, a tour guide who advocates a distinctively Chinese strain of Judaism. China is sensitive about foreign activities and interference. Only 1,000 people claim Jewish ancestry in Kaifeng, a drop in China's ocean of 1.35 billion people, or Kaifeng's population of 4.5 million, and only 100 to 200 of them have been active in Jewish religious and cultural activities. Nobody outside the government knows for sure why this tiny band of Jewish believers came to be viewed as a threat, but officials apparently became alarmed about their growing prominence sometime last year. President Xi's government demanded that religious groups and foreign organizations bow to tighter controls. Judaism is not one of China's 5 state-licensed religions: Buddhism, Catholicism, Islam, Protestantism, and Taoism. Judaism is little understood in China. Anytime it seemed to cross the line of publicity, that's when there would be pushback against Chinese Jews, said Moshe Yehuda Bernstein, who has written about the revival. The idea was, we'll let you do it, but don't let anybody know. The New York Times reported on the revival a year ago around Pesach. It apparently triggered something in the Chinese Communist government. And now the Jews of Kaifeng are suffering for it. In equally crazy news, this from Jerusalem, Israel's chief rabbinate recently refused to recognize conversions authorized by the chief judge of the largest Orthodox rabbinical court in the U.S. In four cases, the rabbinate did not explain why it rejected conversions approved by Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz, head of the Beit Din of America and the chief presiding rabbinical judge, the Dayan of the National Beit Din of the Orthodox Rabbinical Council of America. The rabbinate has often put up barriers to foreign rabbis outside of the ultra-Orthodox world, refusing to accept conversions that they have performed or authorized. But rejecting conversions of one of the most prestigious Orthodox conversion courts in America is simply evidence of the growing insanity of the rabbinate in Israel. One can only hope the new year brings some return to reason for the rabbanut and an understanding of the great Jewish principle of Klal Yisrael, the peoplehood of Israel. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. Last one for this Jewish year. We are delighted to welcome back the two Jewish our guests this morning, Richard Michelson, who is a prominent children's book author. His new book is called Fascinating, The Life of Leonard Nimoy. He's been on Two Jewish before talking about his biography of Lippman Pike, the first professional baseball player in America, also Jewish, of course. Richard, you have a gallery and you displayed a lot of Leonard Nimoy's photographs. I remember an extraordinary book of Nimoy's photographs that was printed not terribly long ago, maybe 10 years ago, in which there were some very controversial images of nudes wearing tefillin, things like that. It was still very powerful. His relationship to Judaism was complicated, wasn't it?
Well, I mean...
Then again, you could say that about all of us, I suppose.
That's how you know he was Jewish.
That's right.
Because it was complicated. But, you know, again, that also ties into what we were just talking about. The book talks about how Leonard discovered photography as a 12, 13-year-old boy. He turned the family bathroom in the West End of Boston, three generations of Nimoy's in a tiny apartment. I'll say briefly that he did grow up in a Yiddish-speaking home, and we can come back to that in a moment. But he got his first camera as a young boy. He was fascinated by it. He loved, once he created this darkroom, developing his own film. He used to say it was like he was seeing people's souls emerge. And he really learned to look closely at people through that viewfinder. And I think that served him very well in his later directing, etc. But he was a photographer throughout his life. He was not a dilettante. He didn't come to it later. He took pictures early on. A lot of people don't know that when Star Trek was canceled after three seasons, Leonard seriously considered leaving show business and becoming a professional photographer. He went back to school to study photography at UCLA, and he studied with a photographer, Robert Heineken, who was what we call a conceptual photographer, which means that Leonard stopped carrying a camera with him and learned from Heineken that what he really wanted to do was to have an idea and then figure out how to express that idea through photography. The idea came first. And he had been taking a bunch of nudes, a lot of dancers, a lot of black and white. And after studying with Heineken, he started trying to figure out what he was trying to say in his photography, rather than just, you know, take a beautiful picture. And we hearken back at this point. He had discovered why his father had told him to look away as a young boy, because when this prayer is spoken, supposedly the feminine aspect of God enters the room, and the beauty is so great that it could blind you. And Leonard started thinking that what he had been trying to do all along, even if he didn't realize it, was to create a vision for him of the feminine aspect of God. So he kept taking photos. As you mentioned, many of them were of beautiful women, mostly naked, but wrapped in sheer prayer shawls with tefillin. This was obviously frowned upon by many Orthodox, but the merging of sexuality and religion was something he was exploring. And I have to say that, you know, we traveled the country with this exhibit. And certainly there were synagogues that canceled the invitation once they saw what they had signed up for. But in every town where an invitation was canceled, there was another synagogue that stepped up and invited us. It really, became a book that was both controversial but also raised the stakes. And many Jewish women always loved the book. Many rabbis appreciated it. But yes, he was doing something transgressive, certainly.
And a fascinating concept of the Shekhinah emerged. You have a great story in Fascinating, the Life of Leonard Nimoy, the children's book, in which he meets Senator John F. Kennedy. Can you tell how he told you that story and how it played into Leonard Nimoy's life?
Well, when Leonard went to California to follow his dream of being a professional actor, his parents were not particularly happy, like many first-generation immigrants. His parents had come from Ukraine. In fact, his mother was smuggled out in a hay cart. His father had to sneak across the border. And when they came here, they were fearful. They, were of that generation that said, keep your head down, don't make waves. They wanted, like his older brother Mel, they wanted Leonard to study to be a scientist or a doctor.
He became a science officer later.
He became a science officer, yes. And when Leonard decided to go to California, and his father's only advice was learn to play the accordion. Actors starve, but musicians can eke out a living. And he went there, and like many young actors, the times were tough. He worked as a cab driver, a soda jerk, odd jobs here and there. He got a few jobs in Yiddish theater. But one day, when he was evaluating whether, in fact, he should have followed his parents' advice and not gone across the country to pursue this dream, he did pick up in his cab a young man with a pronounced Boston accent. Leonard was homesick talking to him, and he told him he was trying to be an actor, and the fella told him to keep at it, to follow his dreams. He said, "There's your field is very difficult, as is mine, but there's always room for one more good one." And he handed Leonard his card as he was leaving, and it was indeed our future president, then Senator John F. Kennedy.
It's a great story, and it's just one of a number of interesting stories. I remember talking to someone who knew him in Boston, said he was from a tough neighborhood. He was a tough kid.
Leonard's neighborhood was mixed, Irish, Italian, African American. Within a few blocks of his neighborhood, there was a two or three black area that where people in general did manage to get along. Leonard remembers that the fellow who delivered ice to their house and some of the neighbors, an Italian ice deliverer, learned to speak Yiddish to communicate with them. But that's not to say that he didn't have many anti-Semitic incidents, his share of them. He remembers being called a Jew bastard. He remembers being told not to come back to this shop. And I think that one of the reasons that the character Spock is so beloved is that Leonard brought so much of himself to that character and so much of his background, and he understood what it meant to be an outsider and to fight for rights and for justice. That was a very important part to him, both as a boy also as a successful later in life. He did put his money where his mouth was. He fought for Jewish causes. He always tried to right wrongs. He stood up for the other cast members in Star Trek when collective bargaining was unknown. He insisted that, he said, you know, this is about everybody working together as a team. That's what Star Trek epitomizes. And when the other actors, Sulu, Chekhov, Michelle Nichols as Uhura, were not getting the same raises that he and Shatner were commanding, Leonard insisted that they do. When a cartoon version of Star Trek was done and they hired only Leonard and Bill Shatner to do the voices, he again refused the job unless the rest of the cast was hired. So, he came from a strong, socially engaged Jewish background, and he brought those values with him throughout his life, certainly to the character Spock.
You know, it's extraordinary. That sense of other and being an outsider permeated the character. Star Trek was only on for 3 seasons.
It's unbelievable. And when a story which I mentioned in the book is that when Leonard's parents did come to this country through Ellis Island, we do have their entry papers, which were stamped at the time alien. And Leonard, when he was offered the job as Spock, it was not a no-brainer. By this point, he had been working steadily for a good 13 years as a character actor. He had opened his own studio teaching younger actors. And suddenly, he was a little nervous. Does he want to put on these funny ears and wear this haircut? But he did think about it, and as he told Mr. Roddenberry, my parents came to this country as aliens. They worked hard to become citizens. I was born as a citizen, and it's time for me to complete the circle.
The book is called Fascinating, The Life of Leonard Nimoy. I want to thank Richard Michelson for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about the book and about your work in general?
Well, I think if people are interested to see Leonard's photography after we mentioned it here, the easiest thing is to go to leonardnimoyphotography.com. That comes right to our gallery site. My books are easily found at richardmichelson.com. That's Richard, MichelSon.com. And please, hopefully, your local bookstores will carry my books. You can get them online at the major retailers or through my own website.
And I should also note there's a fantastic photograph of you with Leonard Nimoy in the book that's just kind of the picture of the light. It's a great photo.
Well, certainly the question I get asked more than any other in my life is, are you Leonard Nimoy's son? yes, we know we look alike. We are aware of that. It certainly helped to bond us together. And in many ways, Leonard did become much like a father to me over the years. I was blessed. Certainly, to have known him. He was a wonderful man.
Well, I can't think of another way to end this interview except to say live long and prosper.
And to you as well. I'm holding up my hands here in my office.
In the Birkat Kohanim. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Rabbi James Rudin, retired National Interreligious Affairs Director of the American Jewish Committee and author of Pillar of Fire, a biography of Stephen S. Wise. Our playout this morning for Rosh Hashanah comes from the a cappella group called The Fountainheads from Ein Prat in Israel, a song called Dip Your Apple. My friends, L'shana Tova Tikatevu V'techa Temu, in this coming 5777 year, beginning with Rosh Hashanah, tonight and tomorrow, come to Maishel. May you be written in the Book of Life for a good, sweet year, and may you have a Shavua Tov, a really good week, and a week and a year, we pray, of peace.
A new year rising, a new beginning. Lift your head up, turn yourself around, the world is spinning.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.